This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Hey, we're the Looters.
Hey, what's up?
Looters is a sci-fi western actual play podcast using the Stars Without Number system.
We're a group of friends getting into trouble all over the universe.
So come with us if you're into adventure.
A rocket flies out of one of these ships far behind you and crashes into the wall and blows up.
There's rockets?
It's Mario Kart.
Crazy.
Intrigue.
Can I hack into the body and maybe see if they have like a memory data bank in their brain or some shit like that I can access?
That'll
literally.
Devastating physical injury.
Just take cover.
Okay. She's a good pilot, everyone. She's very good.
And friendship.
Aww. New episodes of Looters out every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tanya Ransom, creator and executive producer of Nightlight, a horror podcast featuring creepy tales written by Black writers from all over the world. Today, I'm here with the author of Edda, Zora, and the First Serpent, Michelle Tracy Berger. Michelle, how are you?
I am super well and just so honored to be here with you today.
Excellent. I really loved this story so much. I mean, partially because like I'm a huge Zora Neale Hurston fan. So, and just like that time period in general, I think is really, really fascinating. So I'm curious as to what your inspiration was for this story.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I have to say my maternal grandmother worked at the Cotton Club, for a certain number of years. And I always was fascinated by that sort of time period, the 1920s, 30s, Harlem Renaissance and the Cotton Club and kind of her experience as a dancer. And I also love dance. If in another life, I'd love to have been a professional dancer. I mean, I love it as much as writing. So I always wanted to kind of craft a story on some level around dance and that time period. And I also love Zora Neale Hurston. And the story actually grew out of a sort of a writing prompt a couple of years ago where we were asked to have have a character tell a tall tale. And, you know, I just immediately thought of Zora Neale Hurston. I thought, you know, she's a larger than life personality. And I wanted to set her in a moment where she would be engaged in trying to do something really, you know, dramatic to further her own career. And then people being, you know, really captivated by her, which is what happens with our main character, Edda, who meets Zora Neale Hurston at a party.
Yeah. I love that time period. Like I said before, you know, obviously like if you got her in the story, you have to set it around that time period, but I'm curious if you could have put that story in any time period, where would you have put it?
Oh, that's such a great question. If I could have put the story as it is in another time period, that's a really great question. I'm thinking maybe the 1980s, 1990s, just because of, you know, kind of how and where I grew up. Like I think about dance movies like Flashdance and Fame and, you know, kind of a moment of thinking about dance as an art form that is very different than the moment we're living in. And I think Zora Neale Hurston as a character is larger in life and could fit anywhere. I also have visions of writing more about Zora Neale Hurston. You probably know this, but one of her, she actually believed that that she could find kind of a lost city in Honduras. And so I have this fantasy of actually writing an alternate history where she's found like kind of a lost magical city in Honduras. So I feel like Zora Neale Hurston as a character, as a trope, and as a personality could work in so many different kinds of places, kinds of storylines.
Yeah, I need you to write that so that I can read that. That sounds amazing. Like, really, I'm going to need you to not do anything else.
Get that written. Well, I think it could be like middle grade. I mean, because I was kind of thinking of a, you know, kind of a middle grade experience. I feel like a lot of younger people often don't encounter Zora Neale Hurston maybe until junior high or high school. And they encounter her in a particular kind of literary context. But she just as a visionary, and her ideas were so interesting that I think there's a lot of places people could go. So thank you for that encouragement. I'll put that on the list.
Yes. Yes. Okay, great. Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about your writing process? Like when you write a short story, do you, you know, have an idea before you sit down to start to write? Do you have everything completely outlined? How's that work for you?
Yeah, I really have to start with a character. So I'm one of those people that I can even start with a name. So, you know, pre-COVID, when we were all out in the world, like, you know, if I was in a grocery store, department store, and I, you know, someone has a name tag on, and I can just get fascinated by people's names. And so for me, it's usually the character. So there's a character that emerges in my mind. I get curious about them. And then I'm one of those quick drafters. I call it vomiting on the page. So I'll just write a lot. Very little of that then will usually end up in successive drafts, but I can kind of write a lot quickly. And so that's sort of typically where I start with a character. And then I ask questions about the character. You know, I ask the character to tell me their secrets. It takes a little while for me to move them into conflict. Now this story was very different because it was, you know, part of a character prompt, and I had these other pieces already kind of, I think, percolating. So that actually, you know, once I was sitting down writing, much of the context of the story kind of emerged over time. But usually I start with a character, and I usually have to write a lot before I figure out, oh, you know, this is what the story is about. And I'm typically a daily writer. I like to kind of touch the work pretty consistently. That has worked for me, but I also like doing kind of intensive bursts of writing when I have the opportunity to do that. But I like doing a little bit of every day and then kind of going deeper when I can.
Yeah, that makes sense. So where are you at in your career as a writer now?
Oh, so such a great question. I think that what I like to tell people is that if I hadn't met kind of a literary mentor and teacher probably about 10 years ago, I would have stopped writing, because I was one of those people that wrote metaphorically in the basement. Like I would go to workshops and I go to conferences, but I never showed people, really didn't have a literary community. I didn't show people my writing. And so consequently, like I had a 400,000 word novel, I'm not even joking, that I would just revise like the first, like, I don't know, 100,000 words, and that never went anywhere. And so luckily I met a great mentor, and then just kind of got a little bit more reorganized in terms of thinking about, I'd been paying attention a lot to craft, but thinking around the business of writing and thinking more strategically about moving short stories and novellas forward, as opposed to just trying to work on a novel, which is, you know, when you're first starting out, is a really intense and complex thing. Mm-hmm. So I would say now I'm at a place where, you know, I've had professional publications. I am getting invited to anthologies, which is, you know, themed anthologies, such a great honor. My novella came out, or was, I should say, was republished last year. So I feel really, grateful to be at this place. I still think I'm kind of considered an emerging writer, which is fine with me because we're all along the path. And so for me, that means like the next step is I'm actually working on a horror novel that is due with Falstaff Books later this year. So that to me is the next stage of moving from, you know, short and middle range fiction to having a career as a novelist, which is something I've always wanted. And I should add, I don't think I had shared this with you before, but because I just found out recently, I'm really honored that I was awarded the Kindred Award from the Carl Brandon Society, and they're a society that honors and works around, you know, speculative fiction and focuses on people of color. And so I won an award for my novelette called Doll Seed that appeared in Faya magazine in 2019. So I feel like that's a huge honor to have been recognized by people in the field. So I'm really happy about that.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about this novel?
I can tell you a little bit about the novel. I'll say that it's set in the Great Dismal Swamp. And for listeners, the Great Dismal Swamp is this, one of the largest swamps in the US that it sort of is partly in kind of upper Northeast North Carolina and then lower Southeast of Virginia. And it's a, historically, it's a place where it was part of the Underground Railroad. During Prohibition, people would, you know, go into the swamp and, you know, create alcohol. And so it has this really interesting and long storied history. It's now really kind of more of a, parts of it are more this larger park, but it has this kind of overall history. So my story takes place there. And I'll just say, without saying too much about it, because I'm still working on it, it's about things that go terribly wrong in the swamp, both currently and in the past, and missing children and legends of the swamp. So I'll just leave it there, since it's still under construction.
Well, I'm intrigued. I cannot wait for it to come out. And I know it's going to be years from now.
No, it is. I am, that my draft is a good draft. I would say I'm in the make sense draft now. I'm in the sort of second and a half draft, but it is due to the people at Falstaff in early June. So then, you know, has to get worked through and all of that, but hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I will let you know, because I would love for you to read it.
Please. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we definitely want to let everyone know when it comes out as a reminder. So, definitely let me know so that we can promote that on social media and whatnot.
Mm, thank you.
Okay, so let's talk Black horror. What is your favorite work of Black horror?
Oh my goodness, it's so hard. it's really hard for lots of different reasons, but I would say I'll just go with what came to me originally. I really am a fan of Octavia Butler's Fledgling, even though that's not the kind of deep psychological horror that I typically read. I feel like it just had such a retelling of the kind of vampire myth. It's also, you know, it was her last novel. And I just love the main characters in it. And I love the revisioning of vampire lore. So I would say that's what's come to mind, even though there are other people that, I mean, Jewel Gomez's early work also on vampires, and Tanana Reeve Dew's work is also phenomenal. But I'll go with Fledgling as my favorite.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent choice. That's one of my favorites as well.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those novels that sticks with you, you know,
yes.
Like lots of staying power in that one.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I keep thinking, because I've taught her some of her other novels. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But I also think, I wonder about being able to teach that kind of novel, because it's such a, it pushes a lot of people's buttons, which I think good horror does, and good, you know, speculative fiction does. But it does stay with you in some difficult ways.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I don't know. I think that's worth, you know, dissecting, is, you know, looking at, you know, why certain works have that staying power versus, you know, which ones don't. And, yeah, I mean, I think this would be a great selection to teach for sure. So how can our listeners support you?
Well, I'll just share a couple of places you can find me. And I love connecting readers and also writers. So on Twitter, I'm Michelle with one L, Michelle T. Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R. So you can find me there. For writers, my website is, I have a blog that I host and I talk about the creative process there. I do a lot of interviews with writers called The Practice of Creativity. And that's at michelleberger.wordpress.com. So people can kind of check me out there. And I also have an author Facebook page that I post pretty frequently too. And that's under my full name, Michelle Tracy Berger. So I'd love to hear from folks and connect with people in those places.
Awesome. Well, I will put links to all of those in the show notes so people can just tap or click and get to you easily. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you. This was so wonderful. I've been looking forward to it for a while. So thank you. It's such an honor to be
Yay,
here.
Yay, I'm so glad.
We'll be back next week with a brand new story.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.